Skies smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. It's time for the Garden Line. It's Tuesday, and today with Mike Wiggins, we also have a special guest from guess where?
Blue Sky Landscaping. Smiling at me.
Paula Loxton is here. Can you not see, just hearing her voice, Ella Fitzgerald the Great.
You know, I was going to say.
Wow.
I was just ready to put my foot on the desk.
I was going to say, let's just skip the show.
Listen to Ella. Listen to Ella and some more of your great classics that you've got over there,
Meg. Oh, my goodness. What
great
a voice.
Music. Isn't
yeah,
that great?
Right?
Great
I immediately stuff. Went into La La Land.
Okay. How cool is that?
Yes. So we've had great weather. We had a little bit of rain over the weekend. Just a little smidgen.
Was good. And that was good.
Right?
That was good. It wasn't much, but. Everything counts, and we are going to talk to Paul in just a minute about some of the things that Blue Sky is doing, but insofar as watering too, I want to see what his recommendation is now that we've probably slipped back into a very dry period here.
Well, it's so beautiful, I forget that it's dry for the plants.
I know it.
I mean, I don't think about it because I get spoiled.
That's
we
right.
used to get those little afternoon showers, and we're not getting those.
Mm-hmm. No.
So now I really need to be more conscious because I saw one of my plants yesterday
exactly.
on Sunday, and it was like, gasping.
Exactly. Like we always say here, too, you know, it's been a little windy also.
Right. That's right.
And that wind will dry out so many of our plants and turf and container plants.
Right, right.
So we have to be cognizant of the fact that they need to be watered, too. And as we always say, I have, and Meg, I know you have, we have signal plants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got this one hibiscus, and when it just kind of
shrivels up,
the leaves look like old dog ears.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to
it's
water
a hint.
Everything.
A not so subtle hint.
Exactly. That's exactly right. But in any event, yeah, that's what we're doing. I am so pleased to have Paul here. Paul from Blue Sky graces us with his appearance. Usually in the spring, we do one,
right?
And we do one in the fall.
Okay.
So here we are in October, and it's going to be very interesting to hear what Paul has to say, what's kind of going on in the business of
landscape.
Thank you very much. I know
yes,
what we're doing.
It's a big word.
Exactly. It is a big word. Oh, and I've got some more big words for you, Meg, later
oh,
on.
Oh, careful.
Meg just loves Rhizoctonia brown patch fungus. That's just one of her favorite words.
Rolls off the tongue.
Right. Yeah, right off it.
Exactly. But anyway, we're glad to have Paul with us. And kind of find out what's going on out there in the residences and even commercial.
We'll see
what's happening.
This is the Garden Line, and so we want to hear from you. If you're a gardener or landscaper worried about your lawn, any questions you might have, our experts are here on the expert panel, 850-437-1620.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Paul and I might get into some topics here to start to show off about what they're doing at Blue Sky, but we hope that anybody with any gardening questions, period, would give us a call.
Yeah.
Well, now we've got two people.
Two experts.
That can confuse you.
Clearly. And then the third who's here to ask the dumb questions for you.
No.
So no worries.
Never. Okay, here we go. Paul, let's start off with this. What is Blue Sky doing right now out there with your customers? I know it's a change of seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what's happening.
Well, our fall is very mild compared to a lot of other states in the country. So we're still cutting grass, edging, doing all the stuff we would do in the spring and the summer. However, right now in the fall is a really important time to start mulching. So we're doing a lot of mulching, pine straw beds, cypress mulch, hardwood mulches. And now, I don't know if people have noticed, but some of the leaves are starting to drop. So it's really important. We're going around and cleaning up leaves out of beds. You want to keep up with the leaf cleanup. A lot of clients, you know, or homeowners who don't have a service might be tempted, let's just skip this for the weekend. Well, then before you know it, all the leaves build up. So just stay on top of it, a little bit here, a little bit there. And another thing is if you have room in your yard, leave some of the leaves. because our native fireflies actually use the leaves to pupate, and that would help with the we've got a horrible problem right now with the fireflies decreasing.
Right.
So that would just help keep that population.
Can you explain the significance of the fireflies for the garden and the lawn?
Well, there's not really a lot of significance except for that it's an endangered species now.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember as kids. I mean,
I love them.
You know, you
put
walk
in a
her
jar,
out in the backyard and you see them all blinking.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You don't see that anymore. And one of the main culprits is, mosquito spray, but also we're raking up all the leaves all the time.
Oh.
So we still want to do that because we want to keep your beds clean.
Mm-hmm.
But just have a dedicated area maybe under an oak tree, under somewhere where you can have the leaves, and then they can pupate.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? A lot of the experts will tell you that you've got to rake all the leaves off of your yard because, obviously, if you have an area of leaves covering the grass, that keeps the sun from getting into the lawn. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's going to affect its growth. What do you say to that?
That's actually very valid. You don't want, if you want a really nice lawn, you do want to get all the leaf debris
right
off of that as possible. And even as much as mulching it, what will happen is as the leaves decompose, they release a lot of acid back in the soil, which, you know, we're very acid rich here, and that's good for our plants. But for a lawn like St. Augustine that needs more neutral, and so you want to add the lime, it can be very detrimental to let the leaves sit on that.
Right. So if you have a lot of trees in your yard or in your neighborhood that are putting a lot of leaves on top of your yard, and maybe you don't get to rake it as much as the experts would think, it probably really means you need to pay attention more to your lime if you have St. Augustine grass.
Yes, absolutely. And stick close to the labels. You know, we're always telling people, if you don't hire someone who does it,
right,
who's an expert,
right,
stick to the label. Because a lot of times people are like, well, I'll just add a little bit more. You can actually do a lot of damage, not only to the environment, but to your lawn, if you mix these fertilizers, the limes, and everything too rich.
Right. We've always said, if you're going to lime your St. Augustine grass, go ahead and do it. This is a good time of the year to do it. However, you need to put at least 2 weeks between liming and fertilizer.
Oh, absolutely.
Because they kind of tie each other up.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you buy that?
Yeah, and also, and I know you and I have talked about this many times, do not weed and feed. Because the it's like shampoo conditioner, you know? It's just a marketing scheme. You want to do one, and then the next. You don't get the bags with it both in it. So again, don't lime and fertilize. Don't designate a certain time to do each task, and your property will really benefit from
that. You know, Paul, here we are, the latter part of October, and of course we have been talking about putting the winterizer fertilizer on there, the 10-5-14, whatever formula you can find. However, as we get into the end of October, I think we're kind of running out of time on the winterizer fertilizer. Believe it or not, a lot of the experts, once again, we talk about the experts, will tell you they like it put down in August, latter part of August, when nobody is even thinking of winterizer. So I would say, for the most part, if you haven't bought it and you haven't done it, of course, maybe pass on the winterizer fertilizer and concentrate on that pre-emergence weed killer the middle of November.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the schedule we have talked about on the Garden Line many times.
Mm-hmm.
You agree with that?
I do. We're starting to get really cool, and you know, a lot of the grasses and stuff are going to start going dormant, and we're going to start having the winter weeds starting to germinate, come up. So it's really important now to go ahead and start your pre-emergence.
Right, but do not do it in a weed and feed way to do it. I mean, just do it just simply with the chemical, not the feed,
exactly,
not the fertilizer.
Okay, good advice. We're going to take a quick break here on the Garden Line. We have Mike Wiggins and Paul Loxton with Paul's Blue Skies Landscaping. If you've got a question, 850-437-1620. We'll be right back with Pep Talk and the Garden Line. Welcome back to Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg, and it is the Garden Line on Tuesday. We're here with Paul from Blue Blue Sky Landscaping. Mike Wiggins is here. Okay, we've got a question from one of our listeners that was asking, what is the best thing to do to put in a flower bed, pine straw or something else? So I'm guessing now is the time you could probably changing things out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Kind of cleaning up after the spring.
Right.
And remulching so things look nice during the holidays and, you know, in the winter months. Paul, your favorite?
Pine straw.
Mine too. I agree. Absolutely. It's pine straw, you're going to put it in pretty thick.
Yeah.
And, of course, with the rain and all, it's going to get lower and compact itself. Mm-hmm. And it's just a good one insofar, I think, as weed suppression.
Yep.
And I just think it looks good.
It really does. And, you know, as it decomposes, it releases the nutrients of the acidities back into the Florida soils. Right. So that's why I really recommend the pine straw.
Okay, this is a basic pine straw question. When you're purchasing like a bundle of pine straw at one of these garden stores, how do you know? Because I actually purchased one and when I opened it up, it was all gray on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
How
mm-hmm.
do you avoid, like, how do you look for the right kind of pine straw that's going to serve you well?
Well, one thing to also try to avoid the big box stores' pine straws. Because they sit in those trailers for so long.
That's what
happened. And they're also dirty. They got mm-hmm. like vines and stuff. Go to your local nurseries because they actually have pine straw suppliers. And you can get a much cleaner roll or bale from them. And it's much more fresh.
Okay, that's great.
And Paul, I discovered a business that sells pine straw over by Bailey's, Farmers mm-hmm. Market,
yep. mm-hmm.
just a little south of that, a block or so south of that, Lucky's Pine Straw.
Yep.
Have you ever done business with them?
We have.
They sell really, really fresh-looking pine straw.
Yep.
Exactly. It's in big rolls.
Okay.
Not little
yep.
bale. Now.
Right.
It's in big rolls, so you'll need a bigger car to haul it. But it's still, I think it's a quality product.
It is, and the typical roll of pine straw versus the bale, the roll will cover about 100 square foot.
Right.
So it's real easy to if you're just out doing a weekend job, you just measure out your yard, and you can do the math
mm-hmm.
pretty quickly on that. 100 mm-hmm. roll, or one roll is 100 square foot.
Right. Okay.
And Paul, we talked about this, Meg and I did last mm-hmm. week, but I want to ask you about it because I have not used it, nor have I really seen it. I talked to the guy at Lucky's. And he says he's got what he calls pine straw glue. It's like a hairspray where you put out your pine straw. Obviously, you kind of tuck it under mm-hmm. so it has a nice edge to it. But then you put this material on there, and it stiffens it up so it doesn't try to navigate into the street or into your yard. It keeps it stiff. I just think that would really be good. He said they don't sell it,
mm-hmm.
but they do it when they install pine straw. But the big box stores do sell it. I have never seen it there.
I've never seen it. I would caution that only in the – because I don't know the material very well or the product.
Yes.
But I try to not alter anything that would keep the water from getting right to the roots of a plant, especially in your landscape. And if you're – putting a glue or something to hold everything together.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It might cause water runoff
versus
letting the roots get saturated. So, but I'll do my research because that sounds like an interesting product.
I'd like to try it because I hate to be personal about this, but I've got a bed right by the street,
mm-hmm.
a little bit of slope to it, and I pine straw it. But invariably, that pine straw gets into the gutter.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it should be. No question. Meg, why are you laughing?
I am laughing because if y'all could see Mike, whenever he starts describing things, he's very, he's a hand user. So he's describing the pine straw, and he's got it up over his head, and then he gets off the mic.
We can't hear you.
So I'm constantly going, back to the mic. I'm constantly trying to get him to stay on the mic. Because he's like, and then when I put it, it's way back here, and I have the that's why I'm laughing. He's describing. He cannot describe without using his hands.
I was tucking that pine straw
underneath with his hands. It was hilarious. Sorry you can't see it because it was hilarious.
That's all right. That's okay.
Anyway, that's why I was giggling.
Anyway. So the answer to the question,
yes,
the text was, we like pine straw.
Yes.
Pine straw is the best.
Cypress mulch is a close second.
It's a close second.
It's mm-hmm. a close second because it does, obviously, it gets pretty thick also and doesn't wash as bad as the pine straw does, I think. But I still like the pine straw.
Okay.
I like the looks. Yeah. I really do. Okay. Now, Paul, let's talk one other thing, because we've had these questions in the last couple of weeks. Sodding. You do a lot of sodding in your business, I know. Is it too late? Which sod do you like best? Tell us a little bit about that. Now, of course, that's a whole show.
That is a whole
show. I was going to say, yeah.
That's a 2-day seminar.
With Paul, no commercial breaks.
So, Paul, do your best.
Okay. Well, you can sod any time of year here in North Florida, because our winters are pretty mild, even though last year we had some snow, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just understand that as the closer we get into November, December, and January, the sod is going to be dormant. So you just, as a homeowner or as a client, you're not going to have a green yard right away. It's going to be dormant. It will come out of dormancy. Now, sod, different species of grasses have different dormancy periods. Zoysia, which is one of the most robust sod turfs that we have, is also the earliest to go into dormancy and the latest to come out of dormancy. So right now, Zoysia is entering its dormant phase. It'll be probably brown within the first or second week of November. It's going to be dormant. It won't come out until probably early April and start greening up.
Right.
So just as homeowners, be aware that when you hire a company to come out and do your sod, it might not be green. There's nothing wrong with the sod.
Okay, we're going to stop on that note, and we're going to continue the conversation about sod and your lawn and landscaping and fall. We've got Paul Loxton here from Blue Sky Landscaping. We've got Mike Wiggins, our expert on the expert panel, and this is The Garden Line. Got a question? 850-437-1620. Welcome back to The Garden Line on Pep Talk. Paul is here with Blue Sky Landscaping, Mike Wiggins, of course. Questions are coming in, so please get your questions in. We'll be here for another half hour. The line number is 850-437-1620. Here's a question for you guys. We have I have everything except Bermuda in my lawn. Is a weed and feed 1707 okay to spread?
Make that very brief. I'd say no.
Okay.
Not at all. Two reasons. One, as Paul mentioned a minute ago, neither one of us recommend a weed and feed, because the weeding and the feeding generally are very much different times in Pensacola. Plus, if you've got a 1707, that's a pretty good formula for the spring.
Mm-hmm.
That is, because keep in mind that in a three, there are three numbers in every fertilizer, and if you're looking for a winterizer fertilizer, that last number should be the larger of the three. This one is just the opposite. So this is 17% nitrogen, which would be a good fertilizer probably in April or May, but without the weed killer.
But not this time of
because,
year.
No. I think we said a minute ago, we probably would kind of hold off on the winterizer fertilizer here late October and then concentrate on the spring. But the weed killing we do mid-November, mid-February with the pre-emergence. And so that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
Paul?
No, I agree. And the thing with pre-emergence is it basically sterilizes the seeds in the seed bank. So it prevents them from coming up.
Right.
So now's that time, because we're entering into the winter weed seed germination period.
Okay. Exactly. Great. Great question. If you've got a question, please. There's everything that you can think about gardening is appropriate here. So 850-437-1620.
And we may not have time for this, Meg, but I was going to ask Paul a couple of things. But number one, on the sod situation, we talked about Zoysia and all that. I really want to hear your opinion, Paul, maybe just a few words, since it would be a 2-day seminar, on your favorite sod type, and compare the St. Augustine, Centipede, Zoysia, Bermuda, Bahia grass seeds insofar as Pensacola. What's the best?
All right. So I have my own true personal view, and I also have the view of what works best for the client.
We deal on personal views here. On the garden.
I actually for sod turf in the area, which you know my views, more Florida native, Florida friendly.
You know what? That's the cue music. We're just about out of town. So hold that thought. We're going to come back. Don't go away. We're going to have news here in a minute. When we come back, we're going to hear about sod.
Yes.
And grass.
And some native plants.
And
we want
native
to talk
plants.
About that too.
Yeah. All right. Paula's here with Blue Sky Landscaping. Mike Wiggins with the Garden Line. We're going to be back here on Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel, 850-437-1620. Get those questions in now so we can take care of them for you in the next half hour. We'll be right back. Good morning. This is Pep Talk with Meg, and this is the Garden Line with Mike Wiggins and guest Paul Logsdon from Blue Sky Landscaping, answering all of your questions. Barbara called in during the break, and she had a pretty good question, guys. She was asking about, she says she has little tiny oak trees.
Little bitty
oak trees growing up in her lawn, and she mows them, and they don't go away. Any advice for her?
Yes. Just kind of chill out. Because there isn't much you can do.
That's not a good answer.
I know it's not. Well, I've got the expert Paul over here.
Okay.
I'm sure he has absolutely the solution to that.
No.
Oh, okay.
Now I don't feel so bad.
Just you have to keep them mowed, and that'll use up all the sugars that are in the acorns.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, it won't be able to photosynthesize anymore, and it'll just die away.
So
but
you
really,
just
yeah,
keep mowing it,
unless like. Mike and I were talking over the break, unless you want to use a heavy chemical to try to kill that, but then you're killing everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And generally they don't work too much on those woody plants anyway. So, but one other thing that she can do, and we really appreciate the phone call because a lot of people ask this question, is do everything in your power to make your lawn lush.
Mm.
Mow it high, fertilize it right, watch out for bugs and insects, watering schedules, all of that. If you do all of that, many times that'll kind of choke out a lot of these weeds, and you'll be in better shape. If you neglect almost any one of those elements, you know, the oak trees are going to take over.
Right. Okay. Well, so thank you so much, Barbara, for calling us. And if you have a question, 850-437-1620, this is the Garden Line. There's still some time left. But before we went to the break, y'all were talking about the different types of sod. So let's go back to that, I think.
Exactly. You know, this show, we just go...
There's so many things.
Time,
I know.
So I'm going to ask Paul. We're going to do a lightning round on sod. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You ready? Okay, Paul. Here we are. My question is going to be your thoughts. Which ones are your favorite? That type of thing. Okay. Let's start out with zoysia.
Zoysia is perfect for drought tolerance, full sun. If you do not have a dog, you might want to look at another option because zoysia is very unforgiving of dog urine.
That's a good point.
Interesting.
That's a very good, very good point.
Yeah.
No question. St. Augustine.
It's an excellent choice, but again, St. Augustine is prone to some insects, so you'll have to increase your pesticide use on it, and you'll also have to lime periodically to keep it lush. 4 inches is the minimum to mow St. Augustine if you want it to be lush.
Absolutely right.
Also say shade tolerant.
Right.
Interesting. See, all this information, y'all are amazing.
Yeah. But shade tolerant to me, Paul, is relative.
It is relative.
I mean, if you can, you know, a lot of folks say, well, I've got some shade, when really, really have a lot of shade. And we always use the formula, if you have St. Augustine grass, and if you have 30% shade, you may have 70% grass.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just not going to be quite as lush because it really prefers full sun.
Mm-hmm.
Really, almost any turf grass prefers full sun. Okay, third, centipede.
I like centipede. A lot of people don't realize this, though. Centipede doesn't, so it's not a spreader like zoysia and St. Augustine. It can tend to want to clump in, which will give you, after about 2 years, these empty spots, real easy to just reseed. So every 2 years, you might want to just reseed your centipede. Other than that, it is a really good grass, does not like to be overwatered. So it, even like zoysia, just decrease the irrigation on that if it starts turning yellow or really thinning out. It just might be too wet.
Right. Hmm. And also, you have to worry about traffic.
Mm-hmm.
I have found in a centipede lawn, if you letting the kids go out and play soccer every afternoon on your centipede yard in the winter, many times you'll see the effect of that in the spring when that grass comes out of dormancy. Plus, centipede really has kind of a lifespan.
It does.
You can say 7, 8, 9 years, whatever, and you'll end up after that time with some big spots that just don't come back.
And that's why it's really important with grass like that, just
reseed
once in a while.
And reseeding centipede is really, quite frankly, an inexpensive situation.
Oh, yeah.
The grass seed costs about $25 plus. I'm probably living in the past. It's probably more. for just a handful, mm-hmm. but it goes a long way. Most people will get that seed and mix it with white builder sand mm-hmm. to give it some bulk
yep.
in order to reseed, just like you're saying. So centipede, okay, where are we here? Bahia.
Okay, so Bahia is the questionable one. It is actually my favorite. But a lot of clients don't necessarily like it because it looks messy because it sends up all those seed spikes twice a week, right? But it's incredibly drought tolerant. It handles foot traffic. It's got the longest roots out of our turf grasses that we have. So it is a good grass for erosion control. It's just a great grass, except for those seed spikes.
Yeah, and it has a little bit of an open growth habit,
It
too.
Is a little more
it's
open
not,
growth.
It's not going to be as thick as a, mm-hmm. as a real healthy St. Yep. Augustine. But you're right. Florida Department of Transportation has used it for years and years and mm-hmm. years on right-of-ways, on highways, and next to even commercial yep. commercial use.
One side tidbit is there's also some new research coming out that possibly Bahia grass is the only turf grass that we have that is ground pearl resistant. Hmm. So we're watching that.
Ground pearl is if you're digging, you know what that is, Meg?
He looked right at me.
ground pearl.
Oh, yeah, sure. I do, but you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as you're working in your yard and yes. you're digging up, you find these little pink, look like little about as big as a BB,
mm-hmm.
and that's insects. And that's pink pearl. And over okay. the years, there has really been no solution.
There's no cure for it.
There's no cure. And I've always been one to say, I don't think it does that much damage. But it's there, and it might. So, yeah. But there's no cure for that. So you say they're doing some research on that, and that's good.
Yep. Right now, it looks like Bahia is resistant to ground pearls.
Oh, very good. Okay.
Okay.
Last one.
No, go ahead.
Okay, last one, Bermuda.
I love Bermuda.
I do too.
It is a great grass. It is incredibly aggressive, though. If it gets out of your lawn and into your flower beds, you've got a fight on your hands. It's almost as aggressive as I would say torpedo grass, which we all know can be a nuisance. But as far as a lawn, if you want like that bluish green color, Bermuda would make a great lawn. It is a special order sod now because it's not highly used in our area any longer. So if a client wants Bermuda, we would have to special order that sod, but it would make a great turf.
It will make a great turf, but it does take a lot of care. Mm. Special mowing.
Yep.
A lot of weed control and insect control. It's a high maintenance grass. To me, it's a golf course fairway grass.
It is a golf course. It was really, really popular in the late 90s for homes. Mm-hmm. But it fell out of favor really quick.
But I do have a friend, and we've talked about mm-hmm. this, Meg. I have a friend who has a Bermuda lawn, and it's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. But he has a special mower. He knows mm-hmm. exactly what to do, and it has been gorgeous for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And I'm good looking to this day.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. So I think we know what your favorites are. Okay, that is great.
All right, well, we're going to take a break. We've got a slew of questions that have come in since y'all been talking about this, so we're going to get to those right after the break. This is The Garden Line on Pep Talk, 850-437-1620. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Good morning. This is The Garden Line on Pep Talk. Lots of questions to get to from our listeners, 850-437-1620. We're here with special guest Paul Loxton with Blue Sky Landscaping and, of course, our host, Mike Wiggins. Here we go. Got a question. This is pretty funny. How does Paul's team remove tall weed trees? Oh, no, this is the other one. Growing a few feet from older established camellias. Many like turkey oaks or camphor will regrow suckers if it's just cut down. Oop, hang on.
That's,
there you go.
Take it away.
So that's our tough question out of this bunch here.
You need to be careful, especially around camellias, about right. disturbing the roots too much. So really, to be honest, cutting down those suckers and the trees growing up within the root zone is the only way to handle that. And it will eventually starve out that plant. So you know, you might have to cut the suckers down maybe five times. Eventually, it'll stop because you're going to be starving its roots. But you really don't want to disturb the roots of a established camellia and put it into shock of any type by digging out the suckers when it's just easier go in there, clip it a few times. It'll starve out and you protect the camellia.
Right.
Okay. Good advice.
Yeah. Now, one other question that kind of goes along with that is if you have a landscape situation where you've got to move a camellia, if it's one of these huge ones, that's going to be very problematic. However, if you have one, let's say it's 4 to 5 feet, I would wait. Now, it's not going to go dormant. It's not going to lose its leaves, but I would wait till we get into February or in the coldest months of the year and transplant it then, because the roots of that camellia are so extensive and so hard to dig up. And we talked a minute ago about digging up camellias in relation to moving an azalea. An azalea has very shallow root growth, and you can kind of pry it up with a pin, with a shovel, and you're in good shape. But camellias are tough. Paul is absolutely right.
Yeah, and it's such a slow grower, too. Exactly. So it'll take a while for it to recover.
Right.
It's just 50-50 chance if you're going to move a camellia. So just whatever you can do to not disturb the roots, better for the camellia.
Okay, great question. Got another one for you. This was the one I was referencing that has a little bit of humor to it. I have a yard that is 60% weeds and 40% grass and 100% headache. Can my lawn be saved, or do I have to replace all the grass?
It depends.
Yeah, it's a hard question.
It's a hard one.
Without the specifics.
We don't have our eyes on the property, you know? So I would recommend that they set up an appointment. We'll get our team out there to analyze it and see. But without looking at it, what's causing the weeds, what kind of weeds they are, what kind of turf is it that we can do? So there's a lot of variables in question.
How much sun is the turf getting? That's critical, because if it's very shady, you're really going to have problems with, unless you want to do some tree surgery and allow some more sunlight in.
And irrigation.
And it really depends on your tolerance for how much perfection you want in your yard. The weeds are green. The grass is green. If you want to just deal with what you've got with fertilization and watering and that type of thing, eventually the grass will cover.
Yep.
But if you really are looking for perfection, Paul's right. You probably need a professional to look at it, because it may come to, let's clear it all out and start afresh.
So, Paul, how can we reach you if someone was interested in having you come out and take a look? Is that a free consultation, your initial consultation, or is there a fee for that?
Oh, no, it's a free consultation.
Okay, can we reach you?
Just call us up at the office.
Okay. And, do you have the number handy?
I don't have a number.
Oh, no. So all right, we'll come back to that. But I'm sure you can find Blue Skies Landscaping online. I'm sure you can find the contact information there. Okay, I got another quick question while he's looking up that number. Where can I buy centipede seed?
I think any garden center is going to have it. I know our friend Larry out at Pensacola Seed and Garden would have that. Mm-hmm. The big box stores will usually have it. The main way you buy it is in little 1 pound plastic bags, if you will. That's probably how you do it, because that's going to cover around 2,000 square feet.
Yeah. 2,000.
Easy.
Yep.
Oh,
easy.
Wow. Okay.
And that's a lot of coverage for a pound of seed. That's why we add bulk to it, while we put some white builder sand. Remember what we said last week?
Right.
Do not use beach sand.
Correct.
We'll be in big trouble.
Don't go out there and take up a wheelbarrow.
Don't go dig up that beach. Exactly. But seriously, that gives it bulk. Mm-hmm. And the best way to put it out, in my opinion, is with a little hand seeder.
Okay.
So you hold it in your hand and you just walk it over the area that you're trying to grow the grass.
Yeah.
Are there different kinds of centipede within that class?
Really? Well, no.
Okay.
Let's just say no. It's called centiseed.
Oh.
That's how you would buy it.
Okay.
But I don't think, there may be some newer varieties, but I've never used or even studied any of them other than centiseed. It's grown by a company up near Atlanta, over in Georgia. And they've been doing it forever and ever and ever. And it's a quality product, centiseed.
Okay, the great questions that have been coming in, 850-437-1620. Y'all had mentioned you wanted to talk a little bit about the fall season, the plants for fall, native plants.
Yeah.
We have a little bit of time left to touch that subject.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you what let's do. Paul, give us your take on native plants. And then if we have a little bit of time, we'll do another lightning round on which plants of color do you recommend for the fall.
Oh, all right. Okay, so what is your question about Florida native plants, right?
Just exactly what are they? what varieties of native plants should we plant in our residential lawn, our garden, not lawn, in our flower bed. Just what are your, which ones do you like?
Well, this is a great question. We Pensacola, Florida, northwest Florida has so much native plant material that is actually prime for the landscape yard. I mean, even think about Yaupon holly. You know, if you get a client that likes a nice hedge and they love boxwoods, mm-hmm. Well, boxwoods get blight here. We're so humid. We're so warm. We don't have a chill period in the winter. So boxwoods don't live much longer. I would say maybe 7 years or so. Yaupon holly, a cousin, not species-wise, but just in looks exactly like boxwood, except it's a darker green. You can trim it, you can shape it, you can topiary it. Perfect for a hedge. Yaupon holly, it's a native.
I'm going to interrupt you there because Meg and I have this thing about names. And a yaupon holly is an ilex. Mm-hmm. Ilex means the ilex, holly. Yep. It is an ilex vomitoria.
Oh, yeah. I knew you were going to bring this up.
Sorry.
So Meg, that's just for you.
Oh, they're so sweet. Thank you so much. On that note, vomitorium, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with a Garden Line with Paul and Mike on Pep Talk. This is Pep Talk and the Garden Line. Welcome back. We're here with Paul and Mike, our gardening experts on the Garden Line this morning. Just a couple of minutes left, guys. What do you want to touch on?
Okay, real quick. A lot of people are doing this in their yards. Color.
Yeah,
color for fall. So, Paul, in 2 minutes.
Okay.
This is a real lightning round. It really is. Give us your favorites, and which ones do you think will make it through a hard freeze?
Oh, there's actually quite a few. For a hard freeze, pansies, even though they look dainty, they're rock stars in the winter.
Interesting.
Kale. Actually, the colder the winter is, the richer the color the kale will turn. Dusty Millers will survive, and I love Dusty Miller.
You and me both. We've talked about that. That's a great plant.
If you let it in the spring, it'll actually bloom a little yellow flower, and they're beautiful. Dianthus is something that people consider spring, but it will bloom all winter, take a heavy freeze, and the flowers are edible.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The Dianthus, I think you and I talked about this. I planted some Dianthus a couple of years ago in the fall. Lasted through the fall, through the summer, almost into it got really, really cold and it went away. Yep. But it lasted forever.
Dianthus is a biennial.
Right.
So it's planted like an annual, but it'll actually live 2 years before it completes its annual season. So it's called a biennial.
Exactly. It's a great plant. It really is. So pansies are your favorite, huh?
Yeah. I love the color combinations you can get with pansies. And it's cousin Viola, which is a smaller one. Mm-hmm. There's some beautiful varieties out there.
No question.
Can't name them all, but they're everywhere. You know, it's like reds and whites and red and whites and yellows and blues.
Oh,
and
nice.
They're beautiful.
Very good. Our time is almost up, so I have to say this.
You've got about a minute.
I got more to say. It'll take you more than a minute, I'll tell you right now.
Shocker.
I hear you. No, I just wanted one. Thank Paul for coming today.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I appreciate your expertise. I really do. And I would just like people to know that if they are involved in a landscaping project, be it sodding, be it color, be it plant, foundation plants, whatever. Blue Sky Landscaping is a great place to call.
All right, what's the number? I know the research department found it.
Yes, they did. Yep.
You can reach us at 850-426-1976.
One more time.
850-426-1976.
Thank you, Paul, with Blue Sky Landscaping for joining this morning. Thank you, Mike, for all of your gardening wisdom.
Thank you, Meg. Thank you very much. It's always fun.